getting published in The New Yorker is pretty much every writer's dream, and to be included in a list of 20 writers selected by the magazine as the most promising of your generation may be the closest thing to nirvana. 20 Under 40, The New Yorker Stories, features the work of some of these writers, all of whom are still under age 40. And joining us now are Deborah Treisman, the fiction editor of The New Yorker and the editor of this collection, and two of the contributing authors, Karen Russell and David Bezmoskis. It is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and I'm very pleased that it brings Deborah Treisman, Karen Russell, and David Bezmoskis to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Deborah, your introduction to the book suggests that the 20 featured authors are young writers who are or will be central to their generation. That's a big claim. How many writers' works are submitted to you in a typical year?
Oh, gosh, probably about 500 to 1,000. I mean,
we're maybe talking about new people, people whose names you didn't recognize until now or just are barely aware of?
I've never stopped to count. All I know is that the pile climbs and climbs and climbs. Basically, just about anyone who wants to publish fiction in America tries The New Yorker at some point.
And in putting together this list, did you choose from the pool of writers who had been published in The New Yorker?
We looked at people we'd published, and we also looked at scores of people we hadn't published. Basically, we brainstormed, you know, a list of about 150 names and tried to read everything that those people had written.
Even things that had not been published.
Exactly, yeah.
Is it possible to predict the potential of someone who has a comparatively small repertoire of writing?
It's probably about as possible as any as predicting anything else. You know, you can look at what the seeds are and guess at what's going to grow, and sometimes you're right.
David and Karen, you've both published short stories, but not novels, as far as I can tell. Many writers other than Alice Munro worry that they won't be taken seriously until they've published a novel. What about you, Karen?
I have a novel coming out in 2011, but I still worry that I won't be taken seriously. I don't know. That didn't cure that.
But being put in this list.
Oh no!
Hurt.
Yeah, no. I think just generally in life, that's my worry. Yeah.
Did you find that people suddenly were sitting up and paying more attention because you'd been included?
You know, I do think that it's a tremendous compliment. It is as you said, nirvana. It's kind of unreal.
David.
I, like Karen, also have a novel that's going to come out this spring. So I don't know how that bears on the question.
Had you always planned to write a novel? Or I know writers tell me sometimes that their agents or their editors, their publishers will tell them, you know, you really have to do a novel if you want to establish a career.
No, I actually had never thought I would write a novel. I was intimidated by the form. But really what happened was, you know, the story dictates what you do. So there's a story that I wanted to tell that could only be told at that length. So I ended up writing a novel.
Are all the pieces that you included here, were they all written as short stories? Or were they chapters from unpublished novels?
Several of them were taken from manuscripts. In fact, Karen and David's pieces were taken from the novel manuscripts they were working on. In some ways reformed or reworked to form stories.
And what's the significance of having the cutoff age at 40? I would guess that there are a couple of 41-year-olds who said, you know, if they'd only done this a year earlier, I might have been in the list.
Yeah, it's completely random. But you have to draw a line somewhere or else you're just doing what you do every week, which is publish the best people of any age.
You have included a husband and wife, Jonathan Safran Foer and Nicole Krauss, in this collection. Do we see much of that these days?
Married writers.
Yeah.
There's Paul Auster and Siri Hustvedt. There are a few couples out there.
Well,
I don't know how they do it.
It's just a Brooklyn phenomenon.
It could be. I don't know how they do it, frankly.
David and Karen, I'm throwing it out to both of you, but obviously one of you at a time. As two of the writers described as central to your generation, you must be feeling a bit of a pressure to perform. Do you have a sense of being part of a specific generation? The lost generation, Gen X, is there one now?
I can't really say I feel part of a generation. I think you are part of a tradition that you self-appoint yourself to. So I look to writers mostly who came before me, less so writers who are writing today.
Yeah, I have that same sort of response that I don't feel totally I don't ever think of myself as part of a generation, but I was thinking when this list happened, the 1999 list, a lot of those authors who were sort of who I was reading in college and earlier, like George Saunders, David Foster Wallace, Juno Diaz, had a huge influence. Michael Chabon.
Jhumpa Lahiri.
And they were just hugely influential. So it's funny, you know, I really think that, you know, it makes it a huge compliment to be on this list because those people directly before us had such weight.
Deborah, Karen's talking about the list the New Yorker put out in 1999, The Future of American Fiction, which turned out to be very prescient. I don't know, were there any people who didn't wind up doing well on that list?
No, you know,
we're not going to mention names, even if they were.
You know, some people have been more productive than others, but there's no one that we look back now and say shouldn't have been on there.
But I look at them and I don't think that there's a specific literary generation there. There's just, we just lucked out. There were a bunch of very good writers all coming along around the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's true of today as well. They're just, and one thing we noticed when getting ready for this issue was that there, it seemed as though there were even more writers out there to be considered now than there were in 1999. Just more talent coming up in the younger.
Some people would say that's because there are more universities with writing programs.
Yeah, perhaps people are getting a head start.
Did both of you come out of writing programs?
No, I have a film background. Mm-hmm. So that was my training.
Well, you've written and directed. Did that teach you? I mean, how did that wind up leading you to writing for the printed page? It's a very different kind of thing, isn't it? I've been told by writers who do both that you want to have a lot of density in a story, and if there isn't a lot of white space on a script, then you've done something wrong.
Well, mine is kind of a backwards immigrant story, which is I always wanted to write prose. Didn't know how to explain that to my parents and said, you can go to film school and you can see all the names that scroll in the credits. Those are real jobs. And that's how I ended up in film school. But, you know, frankly, what I wanted to do was to write prose fiction. So I kind of came to it backwards.
And it is backwards according to the history of American cinema. In the old days, you became a famous writer, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Ernest Hemingway, William Faulkner, and Hollywood hired you to write the script for a film that you were embarrassed by later.
I mean, I think that still comes into play, which is you have writers who write books and then hope Hollywood comes calling. I think that still applies.
Now, Karen, you didn't start off as a filmmaker, did you?
No Hollywood megabucks. I did go to an MFA program, so I think I did actually get a nice head start insofar as that those programs, I really do feel like accelerate something in your growth as a writer.
Many people wonder whether you can teach writing, but Michael Cunningham points out that they don't ask, can you teach painting?
Right.
Can you teach science? You know, writing is a skill, isn't it?
Oh, I hope so.
there's one level of it which is skill, and there's another level of it which is talent.
Well, but that's
and
true
you can
for
teach
painting
one
or
not
anything
the other.
Else.
Exactly.
Why has The New Yorker waited 11 years to do a second list?
If you knew how much work it was, you wouldn't ask that question.
You devote much of your introduction to explaining why it's important to put together a list of this sort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important to step back sometimes and take a look at what's out there and look at what you've been doing instead of sort of blindly publishing one story a week and not looking at a bigger picture. And this was just a way for us to make some kind of statement about the literary world, about what was happening in fiction writing.
My guests are Deborah Treisman, who's a fiction editor at The New Yorker and the editor of a new collection that comes out of the magazine called 20 Under 40 Stories from The New Yorker. It is published now in a paperback by Farrah, Straus & Giroux. Also with us are two of the writers featured in this, Karen Russell and David Besmazghis. David, your story, The Train of Their Departure, takes place in 1970s Latvia. Was it written as a short story, or does it belong to the novel that you are working on?
It belongs to the novel, but in a specific way, which is I gave a partial manuscript to The New Yorker, to Deborah, And the story that you find in this book doesn't exist in the novel in the same way, which is a tremendous testament to what Deborah can do. She crafted a story which functions as a story, which I could have never done, which I think is you know, a fascinating example of how that can be done and how that works.
Well, you must have come from Latvia when you were very young. Just judging from your accent, how much do you remember of your Latvian youth?
I remember a lot of Latvian youth. I came when I was six. So, you know, I wrote a book about an experience that I hadn't had firsthand, not as an adult. But, you know, it's something that I'd heard about. It's something that fascinated me, and writers do this all the time.
And your film, Victoria Day, which premiered at the 2009 Sundance Film Festival, does that also involve Latvia?
Yeah, I mean, it involves Russian-speaking immigrants to North America, which is the subject matter that I've been dealing with for as long as I've been writing.
Karen, you were also recently listed under New York Magazine's 25 People to Watch Under the Age of 26 and were named a National Book Foundation 5 Under 35. Why do you think that we're making up so many lists
of
this sort?
There's a conspiracy to make me just really conscious of my own mortality, I'm pretty sure. Just death is coming.
And that you're young and you're already somebody to watch, which is a lot of pressure, I would think.
I'm just so grateful. You know, short stories don't make such a huge splash, you know, in the larger culture, and it's nice to have any attention.
But you're not looking forward to a time when they stop categorizing you by age
group? You know,
group?
I do. It is sort of weird to feel over the hill. I'm 29, and Deborah was razzing me about turning 30 this year. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, but so. Deborah, you were also put on an under 40 list, weren't you?
Oh, I've been on a couple of those. And now I've turned 40,
by your own batard.
So it's all over.
Karen, your story, The Dredgeman's Revelation, is about a 17-year-old runaway who's working on a dredge in Florida during the Depression. First of all, what does a dredgeman do?
This particular dredgeman, they're working to dig a road essentially through the swamp, dig a series of canals through the swamp. And the dredge was this sort of fantastic kind of a antique, you know, tea kettle, futuristic at the time looking machine that sort of spuds up these mud soils and deposits them. I mean, they're really just digging through the swamp, through this watery mass. And actually, they would use these to try to drain the swamp.
It's not
in the
sort
early
of
century.
That's not the sort of topic I'd expect from a young woman starting out as a writer. And it's really it's interesting to me that the two of you, not all the writers in this collection, but the two of you have really not done what we expect from young writers, which is to write something totally autobiographical. You've written this story that is from a male perspective during the Depression. And David, you've written a story from a female perspective in, was it 70s Latvia?
70s, yeah.
I'm assuming this is part of the fun, getting into somebody else's head.
Yeah, part of the fun and part of the challenge, I think, that if you want to explore other experiences in other worlds, you put the test to yourself and say, can I actually do this?
Right. I do. I think that's the absolute pleasure of it, you know, the sort of sci-fi pleasure that you can body jump and jump back in time.
Well, you've described your story, Karen, as Hitchcock meets the swamp. And you've included some big man-eating birds. Is that?
I don't know. I can't spoil it, Leonard.
Well, your first book of short stories is called St. Lucy's Home for Girls Raised by Wolves. This kind of suggests a certain sensibility. Do you tend toward morbid subjects?
I suppose the fun of this story for me was trying to do something that felt close to historical fiction. And then and seeing if I could bend it, you know, and get something supernatural in there as well, sort of to play with that texture. I do, though, tend towards kind of darker stuff.
But it is interesting that we have two writers who are seen as representing their generation writing about much earlier times.
Yeah, there's actually, it seems as though there's been quite a wave of historical fiction out there. And perhaps there's, you know, it's hard to point to trends, and there may not be a trend. But it sometimes one wants to avoid the present day.
Although what I've been seeing a lot of recently is dark stories of the past and dark stories of the near future. Mm-hmm. The dystopic novel seems to be mm-hmm. the the novel of choice for an awful lot of writers when they're doing their third or fourth book these days.
Right. And all of this may be a way of commenting on what's going on now, but in a removed way.
Were you thinking of it in those terms, Karen?
Yeah, you know, I do think that that there's something about that period, you know, the Great Depression, that feels really relevant to today. And there's some difficulty in, you know, in the noon light of your present moment, it can be really difficult to kind of have the perspective on those issues as a writer, I find.
It's funny to talk about the late 70s as historical fiction. It kind of, it's the near past. So it seems...
It's 40 years or 35 years
it's,
or so.
You see, this is where...
A lot of writers in this collection who weren't even born at the time your story is set.
I know, Leonard. This is the thing when we start talking about, you know, young writers, and you remind me how what I consider the near
including
past.
Karen.
Yes, Karen. Karen makes me old. But I didn't think of it as in those same historical terms, but it's a different sort of thing.
Deborah, several of the writers you've included weren't born in the United States, but all of them are considered American writers. Was this a conscious choice, or are we seeing now I'm thinking back to the last group, again, a lot of writers who were born elsewhere who have become very much American writers in our minds, Jhumpa Lahiri and Juno Diaz, for example?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's historical, to get back to that note. It's a historical part of American culture that that most Americans don't come from here originally. When we were making this list, we stretched it a little and made it North American. Three of them were actually born in Canada. And David, of course, lived in Canada most of his life.
Well, what would The New Yorker do without Canadian writers? So you have three or four who are regulars.
Yeah.
So I guess we should stretch it to Canada. Maybe
Canadians
would
be
well.
Very happy to hear that. I love that plug.
We should mention that our three guests and others from the collection will be at the 92nd Street Y in Tribeca at 200 Hudson Street tonight at 7 o'clock. For tickets, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to my three guests, Deborah Treisman, the fiction editor of The New Yorker, and Karen Russell and David Besmoskis, both represented in this book called 20 Under 40 Stories from The New Yorker, published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux.